Keeper family. So it was more than 175 acres from the family.
You said that was like the guts of the farm?
Well, the 175 acres that Owosso wanted includes the barn, the silos, the, you know, right where the farm is. That's the guts of what I mean. It's like the central location of it. Although the old home place is still there and will not be. It will stay, I guess, if they could ever decide how to allocate the property. My wife is trying very hard to get the family to let her have the home place so that it can be restored and maintained as the home place and not be developed and sold and this kind of stuff.
Well, it must have been another whole issue then among, within the family, deciding what stance to take on selling the land to Owosso.
Oh man, was it? That was very difficult. That was very difficult.
How did it divide up? Was it the farm people versus the people not living there?
Five different points of view. I think what you know, you're talking about family, you're talking about brothers and sisters, you're talking about people who've been, you know, in their 50s, 50 years old, all of them, lots of family history. And don't you remember back when we were kids and you got this and I didn't get that? And I mean, really, you know, the whole linen gets washed at that point, because I think what happens with brothers and sisters, and I haven't had to do this, and my mother and dad still live, and my mother and dad won't leave any big farm to be by any time. Nevertheless, I think what happens is that you begin to think, not only what's my fair share, but, I mean, what's your fair share, too? I don't know, you got any brothers and sisters?
No, I'm an only child.
See, maybe if you had some, you understand that. That's what happens in families. I mean, you grow up together and you get all these complicated relationships, and so you got more than your share 15 years ago. I remember that very well when Daddy did so-and-so. And so, by darn, I know what a fair share for you is now, and I know what a fair share is for me, but you don't agree with that. And it gets to be very complicated.
Well, what was the final decision then on deciding to sell to Owosso? What was the decision that was made?
That'll have to remain a secret.
Oh, well, I don't,
that is
what,
too
what I mean
complicated.
Is philosophically, how did it work out? Did they finally agree that this reservoir was something that should go through, or was it more based on the family's needs?
Fatalism. I think it was more based on it's coming. Not a question of yes or no, question of what's the most equitable and the best thing to do. It's a very complicated agreement within the family. Very, 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 very complicated agreement within the family. It had to be reached before you could get all of them to sign a document with the loss of them. And I tell you, see, I'm also a member of the family, and I think stuff like that's best left out.
Oh, definitely,
like
yeah.
That,
I'm just,
because that is...
that's a different matter.
We haven't resolved it yet, I'll tell you. It's still in a state of evolution.
Well, I was wondering more in the sense of with the rest of the community. For instance, your wife kind of was not wanting to see this flood. It sounds like you'd kind of decided it was the best way to go, and here was all this decision, and then the family, I think the Stanfords were the first family to sell.
Well, not yeah, they were the first major family
major,
to sell, and Owosso was so key because that's where the dam is. You know, that's where the dam is going to be built.
Right
while
there.
Doing the Stanford farm.
Boy.
See, everything else is just backup water sort of thing. But the dam is the key thing. You got to get on there to make studies, you know, all kinds of design, engineering type thing. That's the key. And that was the, as far as Owosso is concerned, that was the first domino.
Did the family consider their obligation to the community, the stuff that the Cane Creek Conservation Authority was saying about sticking it together and all that stuff?
I think they did for 3 or 4 years, or five. I mean, for a long time, that was the approach. Was to cooperate with our friends and neighbors. And I think it was only after a series of court decisions. You know, in the beginning, here's what Owosso said they'd like to do, and nobody had said that you even authorized to do it in the first place or passing it. And so you had a whole series of hearings on behalf of state agencies who had to, in the first place, give Owosso permission to do it. and the Corps of Engineers has said, give you permission to do it. Okay, once you've got that, you got, well, they didn't do it right. Go back and do it again. They had to do a whole lot of paperwork a second time because judges said, you didn't include an environmental impact statement. And I said, well, the law doesn't say we're supposed to. He said, yeah, but here's a federal law over here that says that when you do this step, blah, blah, blah. You mean that's going to apply to us? Yes. Okay, go do it again. Yeah, so you had this whole series of legal things. And every time one of those got put aside, I mean, doom was approaching, you know. And so I think eventually, I can't tell you which court case it was, but eventually some court said, AWASA has done all the things they need to do to get the permit to condemn. AWASA has been given permission by the EMC, Environmental Management Commission of the State of North Carolina, to condemn. We say it was all done right and they have the power to condemn. Okay. Now there's some appeals left. You know, but it's appeals now. It's not judgments on yes and no. It's a question of was it done right? Did that judge or that panel of judges rule correctly? That's what you do in appeal. See? And so I think at that point, some of the people said, stop kidding ourselves. This fight's over. It's not a matter of win or lose anymore. It's a matter of how long before they run out of appeals.
It sounds probably about the time you went and talked to the people. It came to
vaguely about that same
it's the
time.
The same message.
Mm-hmm. Vaguely about that time. And you know, something like, and I can't speak for Bill Stanford or any of these other people. Because really what they did was they had members of the family members excluding the spouses. And I didn't go to any family meetings. My wife did. Mm-hmm. She'd come up and tell me and say, what do you think? All this, but I was not there. So I can't really tell you why they did these things. I can speculate. But I think maybe it got to be a question. I'll give you an example. Bill Stanford is a dairy farmer. He is operating a dairy farm, a herd of 100 plus cows. He's got these silos, okay, milking equipment, okay. His equipment's wearing out. His milking equipment's wearing out. He's got a decision to make. Am I going to go spend all this money to buy new milking equipment, or am I not? Because what I've got's not going to last very much longer, and if AWASA is going to take my property, then I'm not going to be able to operate a dairy farm. I could move way over here and build a new dairy operation. But I'm 55 years old and I got back trouble. And if I can't continue my dairy operation right here, I ain't gonna continue my dairy operation. It's just too much to go build another dairy operation. So, if AWASA takes me, then I'm gonna stop dairying and just be a grain farmer and grow heifer cows. See, not milk.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't get me, then I can continue to operate my dairy. But I got to spend a whole bunch of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Now, do I spend $100,000 or don't I? I got to know. I can't put this decision off any longer.
That's right.
I have cooperated with the Cane Creek Conservation Authority as long as I can. It's hitting me now in my pocketbook and in my home and my way of life and my future. And I've got to decide, is it better for me to cut a deal right now with AWASA? Well, I still got some bargaining chips. Well, I'm going to wait and let them condemn it and go in and try to convince the court and the jury that I ought to do this stuff. And keep in mind, the way our law works, if AWASA can go to a farmer out there, we can negotiate a price that we think is fair. And it can take into consideration appraised value of the land, damages that we know we're going to create by disrupting you, mitigating things because of other circumstances affecting your future operation, and we can be generous. But when it goes into court, the way the law works is, plus the appraised value of the land, damages don't count. We don't consider damages. I mean, so what you may be talking about is a multiple of three or four. You may be saying that if we could settle now, we can get this, and if we can get a court, there's a potential we're going to get 20% of that.
especially
I mean, really a
being
big
first,
number.
The first domino, especially.
Well, even so, I think that when you take land from people that don't want to sell, and you're the board that's making these decisions, I think you've got to be realistic. You've got to say, not only are we going to take 70 acres of the Tears land, I mean, that's one of the things that we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
See? But they don't want to sell it in the first place. So is it fair to say that some appraiser goes out there and says it's worth $1,800 an acre? I mean, is that fair? I mean, the guy doesn't even want to sell it. Shouldn't you have to pay him something extra because you're taking it from him? And I say yes. The courts don't say yes. But I say yes, you've got to pay more than the minimum because he can't go buy more land. I mean, that's inequitable to do that. He can't go buy more land. It's a disruption, so you got to pay. Secondly, you've cut him off from some more land he's used all his life. You're going to close a road and bridge is there, and he's got to drive 15 miles to get to a field that he used to drive a half a mile to get to, and you cut him off. That's a damage. But the courts won't recognize that damage. You know, but it's there. Thirdly, we have this corporate responsibility to be good neighbors. We're going to come out here and impact this whole community out here. We've got to be good citizens. We've got to say we'd like for you to do some things that don't, so that the runoff from your milking operation doesn't run into our water for you. And you're not required to do that by law. But we want you to, so we're going to give you some money. And you want to, too, because you know it's the right thing to do. So we're going to give you some money so you can build a settling basin there. And it worked good for you because it helps you keep from running your runoff into the water supply. And it helps us because it keeps our watershed a little bit cleaner. The courts don't do that, but we can. So, mm-hmm. And so it's just a very complicated procedure. When you can work a private settlement, it just pays everybody to do that rather than going to court and let some judge or jury decide based on listening to some appraiser standing for seeing what it's worth per acre. Okay. And that's, I guess, what motivates people like the Stanfords to go ahead and bite the bullet and run the risk of being tabbed as a Judas and selling out and all this kind of stuff. It's because there's too much at stake. There's just too much at stake to say, well, we aren't going to do it because the community wants to have this organized effort. There's just too much at stake.
Did the family get a lot of hassle? You were indicating there were things in the King Creek Walker. What about in church and other places? Did they stop, for instance, going to the King Creek Conservation meetings?
Well, my wife stopped going because she was uncomfortable. She would still go, and I would put in an appearance too, over at the socials we had at the Orange Grove Community Building. My wife would call them up and say, I've always helped in the kitchen, don't we need you? And they'd say, well, we didn't know whether you'd feel comfortable helping. And Jean said, well, probably not, but I still want to help. And so she'd go over there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a strained relationship. Yeah, I would go because I just felt, I mean, those are my friends and family. I like to go eat the barbecue, too. I like
barbecue. Mm-hmm. I've had some.
Nevertheless, I felt a little bit like, you know, somebody out of place. Like, I wouldn't really, that wasn't for me. You know, these were people celebrating them. Signing petitions and selling tickets and raising money, and they would hesitate to ask me to do these things. They knew I was an enemy. Nevertheless, I would go. You know, but it was strained.
Has the strain continued, or is it?
Well, they've sort of quit that now. There's really not any organized community effort anymore. Mm-hmm. That's kind of going by the wayside. There is a King Creek Conservation Authority in name, but I don't think that is functioning anymore. I think it has kind of resolved itself down to the Tears of the last remaining landowner that have not reached an agreement with Owosso. And it's common knowledge because it's reported by the Tears in the newspaper that there are negotiations going on now. And it's differences of opinion, as you expect. You know, they think it's worth $1 billion, and, you know, yeah. No, that's extreme. We think it's worth $100,000, and we just got to the bridge.
Yeah.
It's not quite that bad.
Yeah.
I think one of the Tears is quoted as saying that, I don't know how much we are apart, but think it's possible for a deal to be cut, although I don't know whether there will be one or not, because there involves some compromising, and sometimes parties say, well, you do all the compromising, and sometimes people say, you know, if we enter in this thing in the right spirit, maybe we can all come out of this thing better, and it's difficult to do that. I tell you, if I were in the Teal's shoes, I'd feel very difficult, man. They have all the attention focused on them. They're the last remaining one. And you know, people down here probably thinking, and I mean, this is probably what they feel. Oh, those people interfering with our, we don't have any water, and they're just standing in the way, you know. They must feel that way. And people out there in the community are saying, you know, we fought this battle for you, and it was basically for the Teals. The Teals were the center of the Cane Creek Conservation Authority battle.
Mm-hmm.
The Stanfords were participating, but we weren't the center. The Stanfords weren't involved in the actual leadership of Cane Creek mm-hmm. Conservation Authority. So it was spoken, and so here it's getting down to the end, and I'm sure that the Teals feel an awful lot of pressure.
But so let me just take this opportunity to ask you to very briefly respond to some of the arguments I've heard that the Cane Creek Conservation Authority made just about the should there be a reservoir. One of the things they say is the Jordan Lake would be better. Yes or no?
Well, like a lot of other things, the answer to the question is not simple. You know, when you say it would be better, in what way would it be better? Okay. It would be better for the people who live in the Cane Creek area because it would go away. Okay. I'm not a water expert. I'm not a chemist. You know, what I know is what I read and hear and this mm-hmm. kind of stuff. But what I read and hear is that until last year, the state of North Carolina had not decided to let anybody use the Jordan for drinking purposes. Okay, now that's the truth. They mm-hmm. hadn't until last year. Okay, now what they said last year is that it is approved for potable purposes, for drinking water purposes. Okay, but they still have not started any mechanism for letting you get it. I mean, communities have written and said, look, put us on the list for 50 million gallons a day, 40 million, yeah. Cary has asked for half of that water. You know, Orange County has put in a request which included Wausau. So Wausau said, we want this much. Orange County said, we think we need this much for the northern part of the county. Let's do a joint request. So, you know, we've requested water from joint. We're in a crisis situation right now. We're running out of water. The weather forecast for July and August is not good. I mean, below average rainfall predicted for the next 60 days. Okay, and ordinarily July and August are two heaviest rainfall months. Okay, and we aren't going to get a lot of rainfall in our two heaviest rainfall months. So we're already in a drought condition. And then we hit September, October, November, which are always very dry. Okay, so the prospects for getting some help from the clouds is not very good, and we're running out of water. We got about 60 days supply left. We got to look around and see where we can get water. Well, one possibility is the Jordan, because there's a lot of water down there. But, okay, well, where do you go to the Jordan to get it? Well, if you go to the upper reaches, which are close to Chapel Hill, down off of Mount Carmel Road, you're going to find out it's dried up already. I mean, you're even in the water there. But the water level is down about 5 feet in the Jordan. And a lot of this upper reaches stuff wouldn't even 5 feet deep in the first place. So, I mean, you can't go to our close point to get any water because there isn't any water. Quite frankly, the only place you can go for any water from an engineering standpoint, I mean, we can dream up all kinds of things, but the engineers say the only place is to go down to 64 Bridge, where the Highway 64 Bridge goes across, which is near the dams, down in the deep water section. Okay. We could do that if we could get the governor to declare a state of emergency and suspend the Constitution and say that we can just go do it and we don't have to acquire any rights of ways, we don't have to pay anybody for the property, we just go do it under a police state type of thing where there is no laws to get in the way for us doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We can do it in about 90 to 120 days from the day we start if we employ four different contractors. It cost us $4.5 or $5 million, and we don't even know that the pumps are available. We have been trying to buy a booster pump to help us get water from Alamance County. If they agree to sell it to us, we've got to boost it. There was one booster pump available in the United States, and we bought it. Okay. Now, what if we decide to go down there? What if you find out, yeah, you can get all the pipe you want, but you can't buy no booster pumps are made. It takes 6 months to make any, you know. Okay. What are you going to have when you do that? what are you going to have? Okay, we're going to have a pipe in the ground which pumps raw water from down near where the Hall River comes in. See, that's where the Hall comes in, is down there. If we could get water from the upper reaches, like a lot of people said, the Hall's way down here, and it's not affected, but that's dry. You got to go down where the deep water is, and that's where the Hall's dumping in there. Okay, you got raw water coming, and what are you going to do? You're going to run it to the University Lake. That's what you're going to do. That's what you, the practical thing is, you run it to the watershed, and you let it flow by gravity in the University Lake. Okay, now, does that bother you about polluting the University Lake? I mean, because a lot of chemists have said that there's a lot of heavy metals and stuff like that that's coming down the Hall River, and we don't frankly know what the long-term effects of that is. Do you want to do that? It's a possibility. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like saying, we got this really pristine, very clean, protected watershed area out here called Cane Creek. And it's only about 10 miles from the community that needs water. And that is an option. And of course the Jordan is an option too. And the Jordan, from the day it was built, there's always been controversy about the quality of the water in the Jordan. From the day it was built, before it was built, chemists opposed building in the first place. Water chemists from Duke and around opposed building in the first place, said this ain't nothing but a political boondoggle. There's no justification for what the water's going to be. You're just going to be using Durham County's sewer runoff, Chapel Hill's sewer runoff, a whole bunch of industrial runoff. It's not a good place for a lake. Okay. You know, there's your choices. And I think what the answer to that question is, well, the Jordan would have been an alternative. But, I mean, would it be the best alternative? That'd be my answer.
The last question I could ask real quickly is that, do you think Owosso, if they were to start all this over again, would do things differently? Would you wish to do things differently?
I think you learn a lot when you go through this stuff that you don't know. It's just kind of plowing new ground. I think a lot of things would be done differently because we know now the results of certain things. And this is me speaking, and somebody else might have a different answer to that question, like Everett Billingsley, and he may have a different answer to your question than I would. But I think that one of the things we learned is that you need to be more cooperative when you talk about going in. You need to sell your idea a little bit better when you're going to do something like this. You need to get the groundwork laid better than you do. And you need to inform the community, Chapel Hill Cover as well, better about the prospects out there. I think one of the things that was frustrating is that the answer to Chapel Hill's water supply, according to the newspaper, is the Cane Creek Reservoir. Okay. And nobody had any idea it would take 10 years before we could ever get any water out of it. You know, nobody really knew it. So I think the community could be better prepared for how long it takes to do these sort of things. Mm. There's a lot that you couldn't do different. I mean, a lot of it is just prescribed by the law. This is the way you go about getting permission for an authority which is made up of non-elected officials. This is the way they have to go about getting permission to condemn land, take people's land without they wanted to. And this is set up by the legislature. I mean, and there's really not much you can do about that. And a lot of it is unavoidable. I mean, there's no way to avoid the fact. You see it when you talk about water. You see it when you talk about sludge disposal. I don't know where you get involved in any of that kind of stuff or not, but that's a controversial thing. You see it when you're talking about waste disposal, like Chapel Hill and where they take their garbage. There's kind of a principle like not in my backyard, NIMBY, not in my backyard, and you see it with radioactive waste, and you see it with everything. There's a natural resistance of people for these municipal service type things to be put in their backyard. And that's unavoidable. I mean, you can't do anything mm-hmm. about that. That's just something you have to go do it procedurally, do it the way the law prescribes. The law protects people's interests, this kind of thing. But ultimately, a decision's got to be made. I think we learned a long time ago in this country that very often the needs of the individual have to be subrogated to the needs of the community. That's just the way it works. I mean, if I've got to have your lot to put a road there, because that's the only place the best place for me to put a road, you can't just say I can't put my road there. I mean, this is for the good of the community. Same thing applies to garbage dumps. Same thing applies to sewer plants. Same thing applies to water sources. Sometimes, and boy, you know what that means. That means that people who are so strongly in favor of individual rights, you always got this fundamental question about individual rights, and boy, I really believe in individual rights. I don't think the government needs to do any more than is absolutely necessary. I don't even like all these social programs that we do, because I just don't personally think that's a function of government, but a lot of people do think it is. But some of that's wrapped up in philosophy. Just philosophy of government, philosophy of how you do things. That's unavoidable. And so much of what we saw out there was that. It was just people saying, not in my backyard. You know? And there's very clever ways of doing things. You know? A WASA's a sitting duck. A WASA can't say those things. You know, a WASA can't write letters to the editor and make all kinds of wild accusations and irresponsible statements about those things. You know? But your competition can, and you take it. And that's unavoidable. I mean, a lot of what happened was unavoidable. I think we did learn some things, though. We could have done a better job of communicating and involving people and so on.
Hmm. Well, listen, you're a very busy man. Thank you for working into your schedule.
Well, that's an interesting subject, you know. That's something I enjoy.